Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome back. Muse is back. This is really exciting, the new album. It's got to be a big, big moment for you. Another subtle Muse album.
As always, yeah. Yeah, very excited. Yeah, it comes out in, I guess, in a week or so, yeah. So, yeah, very excited. Looking forward to getting back on the road again and hitting it live, yeah.
I mean, this is, you guys, again, not one for subtlety. Big inspirational soundscapes always. It's always very symphonic. It's always very large in scale. Was there a purpose, a point? What were you trying to do? What were you trying to say? Get into my interpretation here soon enough.
Will of the People is the album. It's Muse has always dabbled in sort of dystopia, doom, gloom, kind of apocalypse stuff. Do you know what I mean? Usually in the fictional universe. Do you know what I mean? I've always been a big fan of sci-fi. Do you know what I mean? So like growing up, films like, I don't know, like The Matrix and, Aliens and stuff like that. I've always loved, action sci-fi films. And I guess I've always found ways to try and sort of get that into the music, really. So, and film music has always been a big influence. But often, sometimes the themes of those sci-fi films have always played into Muse as well. Like, often themes of like future collapse or civilization breaking down. You know, Terminator was probably the first, when I was like a kid, like when I was about 8 or something. Like, I shouldn't have seen it because it was like an R-rated film. But I think at a very young age, I remember seeing a lot of 80s action films that had this kind of apocalyptic dystopian vision of the future, you know. So that's always been a big thread in Muse music. Obviously the weird thing about this album is it seems to be colliding a little bit with reality.
That is exactly where I was going with this. It feels a little too real.
It's a lot of those things a lot of the kind of nightmarish ideas that some of those films that we grew up with seem to be coming to play in one way or another. I mean, obviously things like AI, robotics and all that stuff, kind of the fear that comes with that, but also the more scary stuff, which is to do with like the real threat of World War III, not far off, things like that, and also collapse of the Western Empire, civil unrest, revolution, all that, all the good stuff. Yeah,
The lighthearted fare.
exactly. But we were talking before the interview started, we were talking a lot about Rage Against the Machine, and that's it sounds like you had an amazing time at their show. I'm going to go and see them twice this weekend, and that's like one of my favorite bands. And I kind of feel like rock music kind of is at its best when it delves into those kind of more difficult topics, and the anger and the sound of the riffs and the emotion, the hysteria that's involved in rock music just kind of really attaches itself to some of those more kind of wild themes.
I wonder, when you're seeing the world sort of in some places unravel around you while you're writing this, do you stop and say, this might be a little bit too much on the nose?
No, not at all. I think, I don't think his album's unusual in any way for Muse. I think if you look at all our albums, there's always an element of this kind of dystopian sci-fi element. It's just unusual that it does feel on the nose with this one, But I don't think it's anything, I don't think my perspective is particularly unique here. I think a lot of us around the world right now, everyone, I think, in one way or another, is sensing that something is different, something is changing. So if anything, I would be glad to have made an album that feels like it is kind of in tune a little bit with what's going on,
Oh, that's really smart. Then the other thing too that you said around the world. Now I wonder how much, again, the problems that we face here in this country and the things that are stressors in our lives are not uncommon around the world. But I wonder if does American political the unrest that you've seen in the American political system, is that ever come into play when you're putting something?
I think it comes into play for everyone around the world, because the American Empire has been dominant since the Second World War, you know? So like the American way of life, liberal democracy, the idea of freedom for the individual having more power than the state and so on. This ideology has been dominant for over 50 years, you know, and it's, you know, Europe has followed suit really. And so has a lot of the rest of the world. I think what's troubling is for the first time, other ways of life, other ideologies are now starting to gain the upper hand, like authoritarianism basically, which is coming from Russia and China. And it's even emerging in the West. You know? So for me, that's where I see the kind of like the scariest thing that's happening in our time, is that actually this ideology that we all sort of become used to, this idea of individual freedom and liberal democracy, is kind of actually being threatened, not just from external but also internal, you know.
Yeah, and the connectivity of you know what you're talking about and how you're playing off of, you know, fantasy and a dystopian world, the intersection of that and common day is pretty strong.
Yeah, I mean, George Orwell was a big influence on me growing up, you know, so books like 1984, Animal Farm and stuff, you know, that's fiction, obviously. But absolutely.
Sure?
That's the thing. It's fiction, but it's, I think sometimes fiction is the best way to convey fears about the future, you know, so that's obviously what we're talking about, like, so 80s sci-fi films or books like 1984, these, you know, some of these ideas or scripts or whatever, they're kind of like, it's kind of like your worst anxiety is about what the future could be, and then you create a fiction about it, and it almost seems like a warning, you know?
It is such a good point, and I kept thinking about some of the tracks on the album being about, you know, I mean, we'll get into track by track here in a second, but I didn't connect the 1984 George Orwell thing, because this could be the soundtrack to that book.
I think a lot of music could be a soundtrack to that book. I'd be very, if we were ever to do a musical, I feel like it would be 1984, the musical, do you know what I mean? Or something like that, you know?
I don't see what's stopping you.
Yeah. And, but yeah, a huge fan of his work. And it's an amazing way of conveying like this kind of idea of rising authoritarianism and why it is that America created this, the West created this idea of individual freedom, liberal democracy and all that stuff. The reason why is because the failure of authoritarianism that happened in the early 20th century, you know? And what's so frightening is that, I guess, the lack of knowledge of history that sometimes people have, the younger generations have, is kind of like causing it to potentially repeat itself.
Well, the world started the day I was born. So
there you go.
I don't know anything about what happened before.
I think you do.
This is the worst day ever. This is the greatest day ever. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Every day is the greatest day ever. That's right. That's the way it should be.
So, you mentioned Rage Against the Machine, and you know, the one thing about Muse is, of course, the live show, right? Everybody, I mean, from here to anybody that's ever seen live knows Muse live, is blown away with how, I'll tell you, when I saw you at Bonnaroo a few years ago, it was almost, I just put the album on and just turned it up really loud. It's pitch perfect, every song, and it's almost like Rage. Rage is the exact same way. Like, there's just something about creating this soundscape that's so big and so massive with, I mean, Rage, if you go back, there's three guys outside of, you know, a singer, they're just playing three albums. The simplicity of that, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, to be compared to them, obviously, is an immense, massive compliment. I mean, to me, that's probably my favorite live band of all time.
Really?
You know, yeah. There's not any, I can't think of anyone really that I've seen that's put on a better show than Rage Against the Machine.
Does that inspire you? Does it drive you? What do you take from that?
Yeah, it's a huge influence. I mean, great musicianship, great. But it's also the song, I think the songs that they have are even way more like political than anything Muse has done. And it's kind of, it's something to do with like mobilizing the people into a movement of some kind. There's something about that when you see it in a show environment, it really does feel extremely powerful.
So if you don't mind, I'd like to go through track by track on some of the album.
Yeah, sure.
Mainly because we've talked about the dystopian nature of some of this, but there's so much that threads itself through, and there's a couple of spots to the album that are, and you can tell me better than anybody, but a little bit of, oh wow, I did not expect this to go down this way. So let's go through some of them. I'll start with the first track, which is, oddly enough, my favorite track on the album, Will of the People.
Cool.
I think this is the line, we need a revolution so long as we all stay free, right?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, yeah, that line sort of, I guess, sums up what we were talking about a minute ago, which is this idea that there is kind of a change happening in the West, that there does need to be a change, you know, and we just hope that, I just hope that we don't repeat ourselves and go down the road of, because no, most of the time revolutions happen in history, it tends to be replaced with a kind of authoritarianism, do you know what I mean? So, you know, the idea is, can we have a revolution in the West without it going down that path, you know? So that's kind of what I'm saying.
I don't know if your country's like this, but ours tends to swing in pendulums, right? So if you've got one extreme, the next election, the next, you know, generation is going to be the complete opposite extreme. It sort of does that. I don't know if that's commonplace around the world, but boy, we really do like one end of the spectrum to the other around here.
It's relatively extreme, but it does stay contained within a sort of systemic structure which supports extreme wealth inequality, you know. And I think that's really the driving force in the West, that, you know, liberal democracy, capitalism has created a kind of immense, kind of grotesque wealth inequality, you know. And I think that's the primary argument against, you know, Western democracy and capitalism, basically. But I think we all believe in individual freedom, you know, and we want to maintain that and maintain a liberal lifestyle. But I think it's a case of how do we modify the system to kind of impinge on this immense wealth inequality. And it's a really challenging topic, you know. The answer is, you know, both parties in the two-party system don't really offer anything in that way.
Yeah. It's a challenging topic, but you definitely don't shy away from it.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
All right. The second song, Liberation. For a song that starts out so sweetly, and so soft, for the explosion that then happens very shortly in. This is the line that got me. We have plans to take you down. We intend to erase your place in history. Yeah. We've had enough.
Good positive stuff. It's also dabbling in that mentality that people get when they get into a mob mentality. You know, the desire to kind of change, topple down power structures, make systemic change. You know, pull down, you know, whatever it is, like, you know, corrupt leaderships or and so on. So I think everyone at certain points has felt that frustration, you know, with something like you're kind of in a structure where the kind of the powerful will always win, and you know, those at the bottom can never ever make their way up. So it's kind of like expressing that, I guess. Yeah.
Well, I meant to bring this up a little bit later, but it is kind of it's sort of a brilliant way to do it, because no matter what side you're on, you could probably use a Muse song as like, this is my anthem. This is my anthem.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I really don't like the idea of picking sides or thinking about sides. You know, I like thinking about what is it that both sides want, if you know what I mean. And I think it's actually, there is some common ground there. It's systemic change of one kind or another, you know. So I kind of focus on that a little bit.
That is so smart, because, again, there's so much more that ties us together than drives us apart, right?
Yeah, and I think especially important time to focus on that, yeah.
So the third song I want to get into, maybe to me, the most beautiful song that Muse has ever written. I don't think I've heard you write a song this way. Ghosts?
Yeah, really, really unusual. Yeah, it was Dom and Chris let me have a go on the piano, basically, yeah, like on my own, left to my own devices. And I've dabbled with like doing songs like that before, but really I sort of thought for it to be Muse, it should always have Dom and Chris involved, you know, like playing drums, bass in some way. So I've always focused on tracks which involve the whole band. But we kind of felt like we kind of looked back. One of the things we did on this album was kind of look back at all of our previous albums, sort of think to ourselves, like, what haven't we done yet, or what could be done better? Do you know what I mean? We may talk about Kill or Be Killed in a minute, which is a kind of more metal song, so that was like an example, but we'll come to that. But in the case of this one, we realized we don't really have, since the first album, I think, and in fact, on no album, we don't really have what would be called, you know, a typical ballad type, you know, song, like a breakdown acoustic, either just me on a guitar or me on a piano, you know. So kind of really want to work on something. I had a bunch of things kind of lying around for years that never really made it onto a Muse album, and this was one of them, actually. And
well, I hear process, but tell me the story about this, because I'll be honest with you, if it is a personal story, it's heartbreaking, beautiful, but heartbreaking, and I don't know how you could get through it.
A lot of it came through the sort of the pandemic, if you know what I mean. Like, so thinking about the tragedy that a lot of people were going through, you know, the loss that people were experiencing, and how really a lot of the kind of news stories you're reading were focusing on the big kind of like science side of it, and all of the kind of the, you know, the the shift that was happening to everyone's lives, the, you know, all the political ramifications, all that kind of stuff. And I kind of felt like there wasn't enough sort of stories about the real tragedy that was happening for people that were losing loved ones, especially the elderly, you know. And I, so I found that to be really sort of a sort of sad, moving thing for me throughout the pandemic. So I you know, I tried to write a song that in some way encompassed that feeling a little bit. Yeah.
Well, you did it. It's absolutely gorgeous. Oh, it's a really, it's really well done. So every October, I always say to myself, there's just not enough songs about Halloween.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you make that Halloween playlist and you get about eight deep and you're like, well, I guess we'll just repeat it.
I'm with you 100%. Yeah.
I think that you made a song for every John Carpenter and Jordan Peele movie that's ever going to be released.
Exactly.
It's literally called You Make Me Feel Like It's Halloween.
Yeah, pretty on the nose. Yeah, I agree with you completely. That's exactly what I was thinking. It's like, if Muse was to do like a holiday-based song, okay? You know, because like, you know, a lot of the greatest artists always do like a Christmas song at some point. You know, like every, you know, Elvis, even The Killers. I think even Weezer did like a Christmas album or something. I don't know. So we're looking through all these holidays and thinking like, you know, come on, like Halloween is a little bit, you know, underweight here. Like, you know, someone needs to like represent Halloween. So we felt like we could be the ones that step up to the plate on this. So yeah.
Next album, please tackle Flag Day.
Okay.
I'm begging you.
Okay, cool.
I love the, my favorite part is, and you tell me if I'm wrong, is that a Shining reference at the end?
Yeah, yeah, the whole song really has a bunch of Stephen King references, right? So I'm a big Stephen King fan, you know? And I actually, when I was making the album, I read, I can't remember the name of the book, someone gave it to me, but it's like his autobiography. It's the closest thing he's ever done to an autobiography. It's actually a book about how he writes. You know, so he always says like he doesn't want to do an autobiography, but if you read this book about it, he talks about his writing style and how he writes, you kind of get little insights into him, his life as well. And it kind of just sort of made me realize that the whole like Stranger Things universe that is so massive right now, so much of that is kind of comes from Stephen King imagery that come from his books, like the kids on the bikes in the woods in the middle of a sort of rural you know, town in the middle of nowhere in the United States. Like that whole thing was created by Stephen King like in the early 80s, and it created so much of the 80s films that we love, you know, and obviously Stranger Things as well. So I kind of I wanted to put a couple of references in there. I think there's You're My Number One Fan in the second verse, which is a reference from Misery.
Sure,
yeah. And then there's the
Have You Ever Been Hobbled? It makes you wonder, why was there not hobbling reference?
Well, there was, not now, but there were points in time where I was like, there were certain like really intense fans like, in the early years of our band that were like, they did frighten me a little bit. I thought they might abduct me and do something like that. But the, yeah, I love Stephen King, and that whole, yeah, a lot of that song is kind of references to various films from him.
You talk about movies that really got you when you were a kid. I'll never forget that scene. That thing got me every night because I swore to myself, if I really make my mom mad, that's what she's going to do to
me. Wow, yeah, that is frightening. Yeah, yeah.
This is what could happen?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
God.
Okay.
You nailed it earlier, Kill or Be Killed. If you're wondering what a song sounds like that's named Kill or Be Killed, I think you can guess. Fate is driving me insane. It's forcing me to face. I must kill or be killed.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's unpack that one.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I like to bring up the reference to Paul McCartney's Live and Let Die, you know, because I've always loved that song and thought it was like surprisingly dark for Paul McCartney. I mean, like, you know, so, you know, obviously the Beatles and everything, genius, amazing, and Wings. But I always remember that song sort of sticking with me again from a young age, you know, and thinking like, what's he really saying here? Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's really dark. Do you know what I mean? Like Live and Let Die is like, it's about the most dark message you can ever put into a song. You know, I think I first heard it with in a James Bond film or something in the 80s. It always stayed with me. And I think I've always had this thing about like wanting to try and get, you know, create a song that's a bit like that, not musically, but like just kind of like the tone of the lyrics and what it's trying to say. So that's really what the lyrics are kind of influenced from, that song really. But the actual music is probably more interesting to talk about, because it was Muse has dabbled in kind of hard rock occasionally, you know, and we kind of look back at the last three albums we did and realize we're pretty light on that front. We went back to some of our early albums, songs like Stockholm Syndrome, and we thought to ourselves, you know, it's been a long time since we really kind of re-immersed ourselves in metal, basically, and sort of, you know, we grew up on things like Iron Maiden as well, so we've always had a bit of a metal interest. My voice has never really been a natural voice for metal music, so Kill or Be Killed was the first time I ever tried to do it, which is like the full-on the death growl, you know. It's like, it's the only time Muse has ever done a death growl, so it's in there. And and Dom like spent ages, you know, we unpacked like the secret to being an, you know, amazing metal is, you know, not that we are, but the great metal bands out there, the drummers are just absolutely amazing. I mean, all the musicians are great, but the double bass drum work, you know, and Dom's never been like a double bass drum player. So we basically, on that one, he spent like about 2 months just coming to the studio every day and just going and just like trying to get his double bass drum action working. And it was like listening to him practicing and like me just sort of jamming along. We started coming up with some of the parts. And so, yeah, that was us really.
How does something like that transfer live?
We actually, that's the first time we played a song live that hasn't been released for us for like maybe 20 years or something. We played it live this last summer just now. Just a couple months ago. And it had amazing reaction. You know what I mean? Like, even though it's not released, like it became instantly like all the fans love it.
I mean, it's big. It's very, very big, as so many songs are. And then I got two more. Let's talk about a song that goes 150 miles an hour, Euphoria.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm going to wreck the car sort of stuff. It is fast. It is going, yeah, yeah. Huh? It's moving.
Yeah, and I think that's actually more one of the more kind of positive, uplifting tracks on the album. It's, you know, it's
sure. If no one cares, then who's going to save us?
Yeah, okay, apart from that line. but in terms of Euphoria, we all need Euphoria. You know, I think a little bit, kind of that feeling that we all had of being kind of trapped at home for a long time, and like, you know, that, you know, that song came out of that a little bit, of like just missing what it was to be on stage, missing that feeling of kind of fun and celebration and everything. It's probably the fastest tempo song we've done for maybe forever. I don't mm-hmm. know. Yeah, it's up there.
And then it finishes with a cheerful little ditty. Yeah. We are fucking fucked. It's literally the name of the song. Is there a more appropriate song for the soundtrack of the last 2 years?
Maybe not. Yeah, yeah. It's pretty direct on the nose, that one. Yeah, it's like there was a moment in, you know, living in LA, because I'm obviously from England, but I've been living in LA for 10 years. And during the pandemic period, like I really was like in LA for 2 years, couldn't get back to England or anything. And there was just that weird period of time. I had a baby in 2020, and like right as I was having the baby, there was like riots going on in the streets. Everything was boarded up. The Home Guard was there, National Guard, sorry. And then like a few months later, we got evacuated from the house with wildfires. And then obviously we had the January 6th Capitol thing. You know, there was just a little period of 6 months there, just as I was starting to make the album, where genuinely I thought we were fucked. I mean, it's like, I thought like, what's going on here? On top of that, you had the climate change thing and everything else. So, you know, I feel like we're going through a bit of a period of pause, if you know what I mean. But I kind of feel like there is that feeling going around a little bit, that would be a bit of concern about what the future holds.
I think that the reason why it feels so appropriate is because any band can write a song about the last 2 years, right? Anybody can throw in some lyrics. I just found the way that you did it to be concise. You didn't leave anything. Nothing was left out. You did it in a very concise, beautiful way, even though the subject matter is a little tough.
No, I appreciate that. I just think that's probably a fair comment. Yeah, I mean, as I said, it's like Muse has always been, and you know, rock music in general. I mean, if you look at the lyrics of like metal bands, you know, Metallica, Slipknot, do you know what I mean? Like, it's not the most cheery subject matter. Do you know what I mean? Like, something about hard rock or rock itself, usually, and Rage Against the Machine. Like, we all dabble, like, you know, in the kind of the darker side. Do you know what I mean? And it just happens on this album that the darker side really sort of kind of coincided with what was going on in the real world. You know?
Yeah, I hear you. But to put a bow on it, although it does seem a little dire, it does feel aspirational. You know, I do think that there's
yeah.
Even though it's dark and maybe tends to be a tad dystopian on a time, there does seem to be enough positivity. And I never felt in any of these songs as though they're all tied together very cleverly. I never felt as though there was a moment where you said, I just give up.
No, exactly. No, I'd say that if I had to pick one theme that was like a positive theme for the whole of Muse's career, is there's a real fighting spirit in there. Do you know what I mean? It's the idea that, you know, you can overcome any level of adversity, even global, like anything you can think of, the worst stuff you can think of. I think we all do eventually persevere, like, you know, as a species. You know what I mean? Like, we all have this, we have something in us that fights through and survives, you know, and that's a theme.
Well, congratulations. The album's fantastic.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed
it. Appreciate it.
Man, another Odyssey check-in. Thanks for joining us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.